My name is Brian Cotton. I'm with my co-moderator, Claver Liu. We're going to be doing a session today on closing the damage control open abdomen. And we're going to take a different spin on it to begin with and then transition in probably to more of a standard talk. We're going to start by looking at avoiding having an open abdomen to begin with, which I think is critical. So the first two talks will be focused on that, and then the next three will be talking about different phases of getting the abdomen closed. We're going to try to go through about 15 minutes on each talk, and then at the end have about 15 minutes for any discussion with the panel that you guys are interested in doing.
I was going to say, I should almost have Brian go ahead and introduce himself since he already had the privilege of the podium. However, I'm going to do him justice, or at least a little bit of justice. So I've known Brian for a long time. Dr. Cotton is a professor of surgery at UT Houston, and he is going to speak to us this morning on a bandage left on too long, the history of damage control laparotomy. Brian.
So I want to talk about, and again, when I would call this the bandage left on too long, because I think it was a damage control evolved out of necessity, but it was something that truly should have been a bandage, a temporizing procedure that we didn't reboot our resuscitation scheme. And that's, I think, why we have it, again, a bandage left on too long. If we go through quickly, because again, my talk is really kind of the intro lead in here, so I don't want to take too long. If you need any of really the content of this, it is summarized really nicely by Shane Jensen in this British Journal of Surgery article titled Damage Control, Laparotomy, and Trauma, and it is essentially an overview of this talk. This is Shane. He's actually currently deployed literally in Kandahar right now. This is him talking to Amid Karzai, taking care of two of the three survivors of the attack on some of the Afghan officials. So the origins of damage control laparotomy began with the initial Harlan Stone, or at least in earnest and in more recent time, with the damage control discussion with Harlan Stone, where he called it an abbreviated laparotomy. And they were seeing at Grady Hospital this profound coagulopathy was starting to evolve, and we'll find out why it was starting to evolve all of a sudden in their fields in 1983. He was seeing it, and he was looking for a means out, and they were discussing abbreviating it and getting out, correcting that coag, and then finishing up the case at a later time. It was subsequently described with an improved survival by Rotundo and colleagues at Penn, who really codified it, at least on the term. They gave it at least a more trauma tough name, and people more embraced it than something kind of like bailout surgery or abbreviated laparotomy, and it became standard in the lexicon of trauma surgeons globally. Over the next 20 years, about 100 plus applications came out, different indications on when to damage control, when not to, and throughout the 90s it became almost a go-to procedure, and many people almost forgot how to do a standard laparotomy for trauma. At some point, at most of our centers, at least definitely at ours, it hit at least 40% damage control laparotomy rates for people undergoing a trauma laparotomy. And again, I see it, and this is my opinion, that it's, again, more of a poor prolonged bandage than an advance. Even when it came out, because it reflected poor resuscitation techniques. We came up with something to help save our patients rather than fix the resuscitations that were out of control. The 1980s were when we saw supernormal resuscitation. We saw large volume fluids. We saw blow them up like the Michelin Man crusades. We saw you got to swell to get well campaign slogans out of these resuscitation strategies. These are things I lived with. Chasing laboratories, trying to correct lactates. And again, even 20-year-olds were walking around, or not walking around, laying in our ICUs with PA catheters. And then about that same time, in the early 70s and even mid-70s, the blood bankers started taking away whole blood from our use, and they started chopping it up and giving it back to us in parts, but we weren't giving back the parts. We were giving back just the red cells and a lot of crystalloid. Even ATLS, which was just the Bible, the standard that we went to, did not even recognize some of the nuances here. ATLS said you can give crystalloid and you shouldn't give platelets or plasma. Well, the actual references to the papers they were looking at said exactly that. If you're waiting for whole blood, while you're waiting for whole blood, you can give crystalloid, and if you're giving whole blood, you don't need extra platelets and extra plasma. And we didn't really appreciate that. We went from this to this very quickly, and now, thank God, we're back to this. It really started changing, or at least being discussed in many places just like this and at AST and in other meetings about reeling this back and in a concept called damage control resuscitation. Damage control resuscitation truly being made up of three things. A balanced resuscitation, in other words, a one-to-one-to-one or close to whole blood-based resuscitation, limiting crystalloid, and permissive hypotension. And then these other adjuncts allowing you to accomplish that, namely massive transfusion protocols, hemostatic adjuncts, and whole blood, et cetera. We then slowly started to turn around, and our massive transfusion rates not only fell, but as that fell, our mortality rates in these situations fell dramatically. And we started seeing numerous centers that had previously left them open are now getting them closed. But, you know, where did a lot of this happen? A lot of this came out of habit. After a while, we were getting better, and we could close them, but we just didn't because we weren't used to closing them in these sick patients. We were left open for second looks. We left open when it made good clinical sense. In reality, maybe closing them would have made clinical sense. Maybe finishing the operation, if we're heading in appropriate direct trajectory, would be what we should do. Now, this case could be from 2018, or it could be from 1980, but I'll tell you it's from 2018. This is a 51-year-old male professor I took care of that was recently started on Keppra, who developed seizures, got started on it, and then developed suicidal ideation from that Keppra. He gave himself multiple stab wounds, including one impressive midline laparotomy incision that we didn't have to make anything. He had an injury to the pancreatic head and neck, hepatic segments through and through gastric injury, SMV laceration, multiple pancreatic duodenal vessel injuries, middle colic was out and the colon was dead, D4 injury, as well as mid-jejunum full thickness injuries times 4. He responded to the whole blood we were bringing him up from the ED to the OR with. He was hemodynamically already normalizing. He has repaired his SMV. We ligated the bleeding. We took care of the liver and then took care of the stomach. We looked at the rest of it. We trended the lactate. Lactate was trending down. Base deficit trending down. He'd already gotten 18, 18, and 3 at this point. But he hadn't gotten anything in the last 20 minutes. So we kind of looked at each other, talked to the anesthesiologist, and pursued. We did a D4 prepare. Resection and hand sew that those jejunal injuries, did his left colectomy, did a hand sew repair of that and an anastomosis. Hadn't gotten any blood so far. Now we're over an hour out. Lactate and base deficit still correcting, almost completely normal. So we laid some drains around the pancreas, closed the fascia, and left the skin open with a wound vac. He got a prolonged ileus, got a fluid collection a couple days later. IR drained that. He began tolerating food and went home about post-op day 14, back to home. So again, I think we can push the envelope a lot more than we have in the last few years. I think there are still some people that absolutely need to be left open. I think in our shop, we leave a lot more people open from emergency surgery procedures and from trauma. You've got some people that you're worried about, you're skeptical of the bowel viability and things like that. I think those are a lot more of a reasonable one. We still need to have temporizing things to get people out of maybe lower tier leveled hospitals up to the level one. We need to leave people open maybe for revascularization procedures. We shunt them and get out. And there's still some room for it, but I think the room is decreasing markedly. So again, going to wrap things up for the next speaker. Damage control got out of hand, I think, in that 95 to 2005 range. We continued to be very high, even when we could have closed these patients. More aggressive attempts at getting closure, I think, are warranted, and I hope you guys will entertain those. And then for those that do remain open, this standing panel to my right is going to tell us how to manage them. Thank you.